This is Columbia Morning on KF4U. We invite City Manager Mike Mathis to join us as regularly as we can and not infringe upon the time that he needs to spend running the city, but he's with us this morning. It's good to see you, sir. How are you?
Good to see you again. I'm fine.
One of the things, and I have it on my list right here, airport update. And you came in and said, if we have time, let's talk about the airport. Well, we have time, and it's on my list, so we're thinking alike today.
How about that?
So what's going on with the airport?
Well, it's just, you know, success just brings more success, it seems like. So American Airlines just announced, you can get them today, actually. They're already going. Two midday flights, an additional flight over what we have. One to Dallas, one to Chicago. So kind of at a more civilized hour there, in the 11:30, 12 o'clock range.
So that would be, they would fly in shortly before that and then turn around pretty quickly and fly out.
That's correct, yeah.
That is one to Chicago and one to Dallas. And from which airline? From American.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty neat. So they must be pleased, obviously, with the demand coming out of mid-Missouri.
That's right. And, you know, we just are ecstatic that we didn't need to do a revenue guarantee for it. They believe in this market and the demand here, and we're supporting all of the air service we have. I got a little nervous, frankly, after the United came to town because they put so many flights in and American added flights at the same time. We pretty much doubled our supply of seats in a couple months, and I worried that we wouldn't absorb that much a service in the market quickly, but we have. And I love it. We're doing the calculations, but my gut tells me that if you remember Mayor McDavid's goal, 40 by 20, I think we're there.
Meaning 40% of those who are going to be taking, if I remember this right, and you'll help me remember it, you're talking about the year 2020, 40% would be flying out of Columbia Regional Airport when they are flying to destinations that we could get them to. Is that correct?
That's
something
right.
Like that? And instead of going to Kansas City or St. Louis?
That's right. 40% of our catchment area, which is our, officially designated market, you might say. Now, people drive all over to get to a particular flight. We had folks, so that brief period of time, we had Frontier flying to Orlando. We had people drive here from Omaha to get on this flight.
Yeah.
So the catchment area is not a hard and fast rule, but it's generally considered our market. So the goal was to get 40% of our market to use our airport.
And where are we now?
I think we're there. I think we're.
You think 40. We're at 40% now?
We don't have the
2 years early
official measurement, but I think we're 2 years early.
Let's talk more about the airport. What conversations? Well, I guess you can just confirm whether or not conversations are ongoing about getting flights elsewhere.
Yes, I can confirm that. We talk to all the carriers every time we get a chance. We certainly have a big demand for Charlotte, and that would be a natural fit with American. I think there's more demand for Denver than just this one flight that we have, but we'll grow into that. Do want to ask a favor for everyone listening who it does fly. If you're flying west, maybe make sure you fly through Denver. And that'll help us a great deal on the revenue guarantee as well.
What are you hearing from the FAA as far as saying move forward with plans for the terminal?
They love the idea that we've proposed, that we move it just slightly off of the current site, adjacent, directly south. So they love the idea, and now we're going through all the steps to get that. So we've got to modify some documents and begin our environmental assessment, and it should take a lot less time than the other option we had.
I understand it's going to hopefully take a lot less time, but it seems like it's taking forever to get to a point where it says go ahead with this. But is this what you expected in the process of going through the bureaucracy of a federal government agency giving you the blessing and whatever else you need from it to be able to move forward? Is this what you expected?
It is. You know, when you're in the bureaucracy, you understand how long it takes, usually on purpose. You know, we pass laws to make it take a long time. And it's, because we want to make sure there's no abuse in government, that we don't waste the money. But the side effect is it takes a long time to do all that process. We have to get approvals from what seems like every office in the country. And, we get audited by every office in the country. And I think we've had 6 airport audits in a year, it feels like. Pass them all flying colors. We're killing it. You know, our staff is just checking every box. They're doing a fantastic job, but it takes time to get through all that paperwork.
Is there a way you could tell these bureaucrats who are in charge of this to fly into our airport and visit with us and then and have a on-site visit and go through the airport, which they will find charming? And as people, I'm sure others have heard this use, this is kind of a, and I guess the word was charming that I heard, little airport, and then let them see as they set through the security and the crowds that are there to make it feel whether close, maybe they would hurry up their decision.
We think alike. We have, we've done that. We've brought the FAA folks to, the airport. They've flown through, but, we did make sure it was during the,
let's don't give them the VIP treatment. Let's give them right. This is what everybody else is experiencing treatment.
They are well aware. Okay. I'll put it that way.
All right. City Manager Mike Mathis is our guest. In regard to those who visit our community for various ways, and this is something that I'm curious as to your take on the discussion about Airbnb and how they're, I think the second session of discussion about whether that should be taxed like a hotel is for those rooms that are, that we could from our own homes do through the Airbnb business and company. What are your thoughts about those discussions and where should they go?
You know, this has become a nationwide issue. Cities, I go to the ICMA conference, International City Managers Association conference, as often as I can. Went last year. This was one of the most highly attended sessions.
Really?
About, Airbnb. There's 15 or 20 apps. Vrbo is one. You wouldn't think it'd be a big deal, but cities all over the country are having, it's become the highest source of complaints for cities for a couple reasons. One is there's two core users. One is just average Joes like you and me who, you know, put their house, they're not going to be there for the week, so they put it on Airbnb and make a little cash. Some of the more entrepreneurial folks in town did that during the eclipse.
Yep.
And made a killing. And part of my brain says, good for you. You know, that's the American way to do it, right? But their neighbors weren't so happy, you know, because if you rent it out in the middle of a neighborhood and you have 20 people come stay there, it's not passed any sort of rental code. And they look at it as, a party.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, as the owner, you risk a lot of damage to your house, and that does happen. And the neighborhood deals with, you know, too many cars on the street, loud parties till 3 a.m., a mess afterward. And we're getting more and more of those complaints from the residential neighborhoods.
Hmm.
The other negative side is when corporations do it as an extension of their business. So let's say I have a big apartment complex and it's half empty. I'm not picking on student housing, but let's just say that's an example. Maybe I put the whole thing on Airbnb. And if it rents out even a part of the month, you're actually making money on the deal over renting it out over a monthly basis. And so you're really running a hotel, and you're not following any of those regulations or paying your fair share of the freight, you know. So partly this is our local laws, and all over the country we're having the same issues. They kind of lag behind the development of the apps and the reality. So it's really kind of a catch-up phase we're in.
So what are communities doing? Because I was thinking of it as whether they should be charged the tax or not, but that is a whole broader issue of saying, how do you regulate it? Because I was thinking of as like Uber or Uber or Lyft, and how that came into markets and all of a sudden became an immediate competition to traditional taxis. Oh, yeah. Well, now you have Airbnb, which would be a direct competition to hotel if you're manager of that.
Oh, you bet.
So what are others doing to combat what you said? I mean, are they saying, well, you could only rent your house out to this number of people or only this number of times to protect the integrity of a neighborhood?
You got it. Both of those things are the primary responses. You know, most single-family homes, they're not zoned for hotel use, right? No one bought their house expecting a hotel next door. So there are things city governments traditionally regulate, and that's one, you know, how you use the land, the property. And so a lot of the response has been about catching up on the zoning side, the enforcement side. And what you do is there are companies you can hire that will kind of a turnkey solution. They'll come in and they search all the apps and find who's leasing, and they send them letters saying, hey, don't forget, here are the rules. Hmm. And, you know, we're going to pop in and check every so often. And they do. And so it's a regulated, but it's a trust but verify approach.
So that's what they're doing here in Columbia? Or are you thinking
yet.
About doing that in
not
Columbia?
Yet. They yeah. do that in other cities.
Would a neighborhood covenant, and I don't know if that, a neighborhood covenant, could that be written to prohibit Airbnb usage in that neighborhood?
Certainly. Yes. In fact, there are, funny enough, many neighborhoods that already have something like that, so it covers it, that you can't rent your home out in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, those would cover. And then if we were to go down the path of hiring an enforcement agent or staff up to have an enforcement agent, that's the kind of thing that we could enforce as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm. Will that come up for a conversation with the council sometime soon?
I'm confident it will. Yeah. We're receiving a growing number of complaints.
Yeah.
Every ward.
Mike Mathis, again, is our guest. We'll move on to another topic. Let's move on to the community policing. What the city decided in its last council meeting was to proceed with this. It's been a conversation for quite some time. By the end of August, there needs to be what in place?
We're going to deliver a plan, a transition plan to a community-oriented police philosophy citywide with a budget proposal and a kind of a good description of what the service line is, how we'll do it. That's the outcome. Now, we have a long journey to get there. So we're going to involve every stakeholder group who has a passion about it. We're going to go meet with them. We're going to have town hall meetings where anyone who wants to weigh in on this can. We're going to have a lot of learning sessions, too. So we're going to bring folks from all over the country here to tell us how they do it. We've got some movies. We want to have a movie night or two just to watch. You know, there's some good film about it. And then really just think through, how do we want to police our city? And it's got to be in partnership. So, you know, the police department's a key stakeholder here. So they're going to be going through the same process as all other groups as we move through it. Just picked a phenomenal person to help me with this. Quite frankly, I'm fully tasked now, and taking on this project, I would not have had the ability to get it done in 6 months. So I reached out to the police department, asked for volunteers. I got five. I talked to him, interviewed him, and all were brilliant. But Sergeant Fox, who I picked, just hit the home run, hit it out of the park. So he's got a tremendous background, does community policing that he can on his shift. So one of the compelling things he does is he has his officers, requires them to have a non-enforcement-related contact with someone in their beat every shift. Now, that can be tough on some days.
Yeah, I would think that it would be if you had a busy day. Yep.
Yeah. So there are days they can't get to it, but you know, if there's a homicide or something, that trumps everything, you know. So
do they document that?
They
Does he have them document what they did that was a non-enforcement type of interaction with somebody in their beat?
They do. They got to text him and or report out in some way. Funny enough, it's evolved into some pretty fun stuff. So they've got some selfie Thursday type type work, yeah, where they you know, they're getting to build relationships with business owners in their beat. Families in their beat, getting to know, you know, it is community policing at its core.
What is his area that he's watching? Where are his officers? What are their beats? Is it the city, inner city? Is it what part of the town?
Yes, and it's second shift, so it's midday to late night, but it's not overnight. And so they see the most calls that shift, and they sometimes it can be very hard to make those contacts.
You know this from your time here and just from a time of serving in the public. For every action, there is a reaction. So what is your thought to the reaction to choosing him as the man? Because it was a day or two after that was announced when the article came out that said, well, he was involved in this SWAT effort.
Yeah, you know, I was very disappointed in that reporting. They certainly chose to focus on one event almost 10 years ago, and they ignored everything else we had told them that they knew about. Sergeant Fox has saved three people's lives in his tenure, too. One through CPR, one through a chest seal, one through a tourniquet. So he's one of my heroes, you know. This is the kind of officer we want. Honest, honorable, hardworking guy. And they chose not to mention any of that. And so I'm very frustrated with Tribune right now. That reporting is some of the worst I've seen. Now, they're just playing to, you know, the outrage and pandering to outrage. And I don't think it's going to help sell any papers. But so especially when you have people learn and meet who Sergeant Fox is and learn about, you know, he's been nominated for Supervisor of the Year twice. You know, he's one of our beloved officers.
I'd like to have him on sometime.
We'll make it
afraid
happen.
To make that talk about that and what he's doing, as you describe that, with those who he've said, tell me what you're doing to do community policing, and then to hear how he's going to be involved over the next, what is that? August is the eighth month?
Six months.
Mm-hmm. Because today is the last of this. You've got 6 months to get that done. Yeah. And that would lead to perhaps a proposal, which leads me to ask you about something that showed up. I think it was on the Tribune's page today, talking about Matt Pitzer, who has said, here's an idea. I like this, and I think you as a leader welcome or could or should welcome these kinds of ideas also. I don't know whether to go anyplace or not, but you, as they like to say, run it up the flagpole and see how people respond to this. And Matt Pitzer said in the press conference yesterday, how about let's give some money towards a down payment on a home or rent assistance and see if that won't attract more to being law enforcement officers in this community. Your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great idea. I think it's worth trying. It is a perfect use of savings. We do have some savings coming for next year. So I think it's a great idea, you know, and the idea that we might increase the number of folks who choose to live inside the city. And I loved his idea of kicking up the amount of money we would assist with if you chose one of our strategic plan neighborhoods. So in the most needy parts of town, so to speak, to have officers there is a big deal. So I love the idea.
For those who don't know, I think it's going to be a further discussion, and it will probably come up somewhere down the line to the city council, and then they would say, well, because the city council will decide how to spend extra money. Is that right?
Always. Yeah. Yeah. They decide how we spend every dollar.
Let's move on. I like hitting as many topics as I can. How about the sports park conversation about whether it would be Parks and Recreation involved with a county and a private nonprofit at where many of us are always going to refer to it as the old fairgrounds, or stay at Phillips Park? What's happening with that?
Perfect timed question. Earlier this week, I did email all of our negotiation partners and the commission and council and said, you know, after a lot of consultation with council and everyone else, we're going to go ahead and move forward with the Phillips site with this particular project. If we wait any farther, we have to lose an entire year of construction. And frankly, the deal that was negotiated wasn't going to get across the finish line. And so now that said, it's a great idea. At the fairgrounds to develop that into a sports destination. It's a perfect use of that particular location. So I don't think that idea is dead. I think we're going to – I know our intent is to continue to plan in that direction. So I believe something will come of all this. But this particular sports field house, we're going to go ahead and finish what we started and build it at Phillips.
What do you do as a manager? You have to guard the risk that is involved in the city, because you might build up a reputation of a department like Parks and Recreation or just the city's reputation. So how did you weigh the risk in saying, well, what are we risking if we do this? What are we risking if we do that? You had two good options and you had to weigh the risks.
That's right. We felt compelled, you know, we'd gotten pretty much down to the very last, in fact, we were at the very last action to then go ahead and build the field house. And all of our public improvement, there's a 9-step process to build anything for the city. And we got to get 9 yeses out of council to get it built. So we have to do a lot of risk assessment, and we have to prove these ideas are worthy. And over time, you know, you develop tremendous trust when you do it right. Parks has done that. So we got to the very last point when this opportunity came forward. And it was such a compelling idea that we thought, okay, we wouldn't be serving the community if we didn't pause and really flesh it out, check it out. And if it's ready to go and can do it, it might be better for the community to pivot and move it. So we weighed all the risk, and at the end of the day, there was too much risk and not enough sure bets up there where this was done deal. So we're gonna move forward with the done deal, the bird in hand, so to speak, but keep the door open for bigger things at the fairgrounds.
What has been the reaction to those who wanted something to happen there rather than the south part of town?
I haven't had any no one's called and yelled at me or thrown any box in my window, but you know, I think there's probably a little disappointment because it is a compelling concept, but at the same time, and I know we're totally committed to moving toward that direction. This particular deal wasn't good enough to cross the finish line, but I think we'll find one.
The area where you're now saying that it is a four-court, if you were talking basketball courts,
That's
it
right.
would be a four-court facility for quite some time has been discussed by Parks and Rec and others as being a truly, when you put the Gans area just across the street from the Phillips area, that is a huge recreational area in the south part of Columbia. If you look at that as its total development, what you have on the board or what people have on the board for the future of that. So that would have been a switch away from what had been talked there.
Yes. And that's how we think of Gans and Phillips. We think of them as one asset, really, even though there's two parks, two names. And there's a master plan for both, and we would have finished the master plans, even though we would have pivoted if we had gone that way. But now, of course, we're going to go ahead and build this there. There's room down there to expand that, too. So long term, the vision is to have a bigger, you know, more courts than just four. But we're going to start with four.
Anything else on your mind this morning? We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. I don't have to tell anybody, but this, if you're going to go outside, I recommend it. It's pretty fantastic out there.
Meaning weather-wise, nice outside.
Well, a little overcast, but it's not raining.
Yeah, spring is coming up. I hope it's a good spring for you. There'll be a city council meeting on Monday night, so it will take up some of these concerns on especially like what you just talked about, the sports park location.
That's right.
That is something that they just have to say, okay, we'll stick with what we originally decided.
That's right. I believe it's going on. I think it's first read on this. So the decision-making process begins. The ninth yes will start on Monday.
The ninth yes will start. You sound like, again, this is like the FAA deciding on what about a terminal for the airport.
It's always a process.
It happens on the city level also. But yeah. It is one that has some timeliness to it because you want to have something built. We'd like to have it available by next fall, but you'd have to hurry to get it then by then.
Yeah, we're cutting it close. This is as far as we can wait. So I think we'll have it, though.
Thank you very much for your time. Always appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Mike Mathis, City Manager of Columbia, has been our guest. This is KFRU.